Do you have a liquid for us?
So now we'll move to our last talk of the day, Mr. Noel Power and Samba and the road to Python 3. So
hey, go back, so I'll just go back. Okay, so good afternoon. Welcome to my talk. My name is Noel Power. I work for SUSE, and I work on Samba, and I'm also part of the Samba team. And I'm going to talk today about our little adventure trying to get us working on Python 3. I'm fine with heckling. So I'm going to do a sort of a reverse Jeremy warning, in that this could be called, you know, Python 3 sort of compatibility light, okay? So I'm not going to go into any deep and desperate code type examples or anything like that. So if you're looking for the deep and dirty details, I have some links at the end of the presentation that people can go to get that sort of information. But I prefer to forget all about that, to be perfectly honest. And anyway, I think I'll probably bore you all enough with my talk without doing the technical side of things as well. So what are we going to do? Okay, so I'm going to talk briefly about why we had to go to Python 3, if it's not already obvious. People often ask what's in what release, so I'll do a little bit about that. I'll go through a bit of the history of the porting effort, then some of the challenges involved, and then some lessons learned, and then I'll take questions, but I will admit that I will try and avoid them. Hopefully we won't have any time left. So moving on swiftly. Okay, why move to Python 3? Okay, in case anybody hasn't heard, Python 2 is going EOL the start of 2020. It's not going to be supported anymore. And enterprise vendors like ourselves in Samba in SUSE and the likes of Red Hat, we're backing away, as they say, from Python 2. And in fact, SLES SP1, which is our latest release, it's kind of going GA at the moment, and RHEL 8 is the same. Python 3 is the default. There is no Python 2. If you want to use Python 2 in any of those releases, certainly in SLES, you can access Python 2. It will be difficult, and it's not supported, and I would suspect the same is true for Red Hat. So, there's obvious reasons within the language itself. Why is it going EOL? There are perfectly good reasons. There are genuine problems there. So, you know, the move is compelling in its own right, and really, for the likes of me, in an environment where you're supporting the enterprise, you've just been told you're doing it. So I had no choice. Guys in Red Hat have no choice, we just have to do it. And it's just a question of how, when, where, and how quickly, really. Because I think one of the things you need to do with something like this is do it as quickly as possible and see the problems as soon as possible. So our current release has the Python 3 compatibility, so there will be bugs, I'm sure. Please report them, and we will fix them. Another thing that when I used to talk about what I was roped into doing was, but why is this such a big deal? I mean, Samba's written in C. What's all this Python stuff about? Sure, you don't use Python that much, but actually, surprisingly enough, we have a lot of Python in Samba. The build system is written completely in Python. We use this thing called WAF. I think it came from Google, did it? Does anybody know? Some upstream maintained project anyway. Okay, and So we have a build system that's written in Python.
Yeah. So it's Python. It's an independent project, but not sadly not with some big support behind it. So
good.
Yeah.
But okay, this is Samba. So we just don't have WAF. We have Samba WAF, because Samba people can't leave things alone. They have to poke at them and make them even more complicated. So WAF isn't well understood. WAF Samba or Samba WAF, whatever you want to call it, is even less well understood. We also have, and I was surprised to realize this, we have about 70 or so Python modules that are used by the Samba AD kind of thing. There's quite a bit of the test environment is written in Python. We have lots and lots and lots of unit tests written in Python. You have some bits of are the torture tests that call out Python functionality, and you have the Samba daemon under AD itself calls Python functionality. Say, I think there's code to pull GPO objects from sysfile and do DNS updates and stuff like that. So there's quite a substantial hunk of Python goop in the system. No. Not really. Oh, well, I suppose there are the Samba tools that are part of the Samba AD stuff. Sorry, when you said UI, I kind of immediately thought GUI. I was going, no, we don't have that. It would be nice, but we don't. Okay, so just moving on to what's supported and what release. So, okay, you probably all know we're currently on 4.10, but 4.9 is still supported. Anything before that is just security release stuff. So there is some rudimentary support for Python 3, and we did even start pushing in some Python 2 porting stuff in there in that release. So we've got this extra Python switch, and that allows you to build CPython modules against Python 3, obviously, in 4.9. I'm not sure how useful they are. They certainly aren't complete in 4.9. And you can, I believe, run some Python test scripts in 4.9. I know you can configure them to be run. I'm not sure in the CI we actually did run any in 4.9. I can't really remember. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But anyway, 4.9 is basically Python 2 with a minimum version of 2.6, which brings us to 4.10. That's our current release. This is the big one that we're talking about. It's first release that supports Python 3, and the thing to point out is the word compatible at the end of the sentence. So it's Python 2 and Python 3 compatible. We'll talk a little bit about that more later. So it basically means we have the same code base. We'll run under both. You can still get your old comfortable legacy versions, which we hope people don't do, because then that hides the problems that are there. But you can do it if you need to. So you can specify Python pointing at the point of 2, and you can run configure and make. So configure and make obviously are part of the WAF thing that we spoke about earlier. That actually is Python. There are scripts that run Python. The Python 3 build can kind of do the opposite as well. So you can build Python 2 targets if you want to, say, if you're a packager and you want to package both Python 2 stuff and Python 3 stuff. But by default, anyway, the build runs and configures under Python 2. And again, minimum support version is 2.6 and 3.4. Moving on. So, 4.11. So this is master. Next release will be 4.11. And this will be another sort of milestone release, because it's going to be Python 3 only. Say goodbye to Python 2. I know the first point here is a little confusing, because we mentioned Python 2. But then it's kind of confusing when you have a sentence that says, this is what's going to be supported. We'll support Python 2, but we're not supporting Python 2. And it's supported when you configure with minus disabled Python. So you're Python disabling Python. Bleh. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, does it? But what you can take away from it is that really, if you want to use Python 2, you'll just basically be able to build Samba without any Python functionality when it actually builds everything in the end. Otherwise, you're building under Python 3 and you have your standard everything that you want or may want that has Python 3 in it. So I just say future releases there, but that actually is 4.11 or maybe minor releases of 4.11. It would be really great to bump the version of Python 3, because 3.4 is pretty sadly low, I think. I mean, what version, Andreas, is RHEL 8 going to ship with? Is it 3.6 or 3.7? Yeah, and I think we're the same. So there's like two enterprise versions that are already on 3.6 and we're 3.4 here, so. Yeah. I didn't even know that. Well, there you go. So something else that we could do is there's still a lot of compatibility code that we have in there in order to write this Python 2 and Python 3 stuff. So it would be great to get rid of that. I guess it's kind of still there at the moment because Python 3 or Samba 4.10 is only just out. And I guess some people are still writing patches and want them easily transferable to 4.10. Other people are doing both, writing patches that are Python 3 only and Python 2 version then for 4.10. But yeah, it's something to think about. We should probably think about getting rid of that stuff at some stage, sooner rather than later. But there's nothing to prevent anybody from writing Python 3 code anyway in master. And you don't need to care about Python 2. So when I was preparing for this talk, I did a little bit of archaeology. And I was pretty surprised when I pointed out to search for me, you're talking about Python 3. Search for Python 3. And actually, 10 years ago, somebody was doing Python 3 compatibility changes. Tridge. So, I mean, it's quite amazing that somebody was actually thinking about this problem that we had nearly 10 years ago. But unfortunately, nobody seemed to think very much about it for the next couple of years. So, I think around...
There was a serious thought to keep your head in the sand, that we were too big to fail and that we would just leave the enterprise distros to maintain Python 2 forever. So, you know... but this later thing started happening. Red Hat turned up and said, "Oh, we'll do it."
Yep.
I'll let you finish the slide, and then I'll tell you the horrible story what I did to them.
Okay. Well, so the next sort of key kind of things that happened were around the start of 2015, and Petter Victorin, whose name I've probably horribly mispronounced. I think we've got a lot to thank him for because he put in a lot of that foundation code that allowed us to sort of transition to Python 3 in a sane kind of manner. So he introduced this extra Python configure option, which allows you to specify basically Python 3 as the extra Python, and it would allow you to build modules or the C Python modules using the Python module that our Python version specified. With the extra Python switch. So obviously that allows you the space to iteratively choose a module and start developing it or converting it and without affecting everything else. And also he put in that kind of support there that you could configure a test that it would run with the extra Python version so you could start piecemeal moving tests along as well. He additionally did a lot of cleaning up because if anybody's looked at our Python C code, they would realize we really don't know very much about writing Python C. So he helped a lot there. And he then did the complete porting of those external kind of libraries that are part of Samba that are shipped separately or independently. So we've got Talloc, LDB, TEvent, etc. And there exists already Python API for those, so Petter converted those at those dates or in that time frame to Python 3 as well using the sort of scaffolding that he put in place there. So he would have done the most of the C API compatibility code that's there because there are changes, significant changes in the C API as well. And again, I'm not going to go into the details of those, but he put in that compatibility code that allows us to more easily do that.
So the thing that you came too late to learn was the Faustian bargain that I put upon these rather keen Red Hatters who came saying, "Hey, we want to help you move to Python 3. I said, "Sure, but you know this code isn't very well tested, so you're going to need to write the tests for the code that you're porting. That would be reasonable." So we made them write the test, the first test framework for all those Python bindings. And your now your slide here now lists all the other Red Hat engineers who we burnt out. With in following that.
Yeah, and they deserve to be mentioned because they did. Without them, there is no way this would have ever happened. So we had Loomer, I won't even attempt to pronounce his surname, also a Red Hat guy, ported a lot of C Python modules, and then our own Alexander, who's a member of the Samba team, he ported us to the latest at the time, this time last year, I believe, WAF 2.08, which was Python 2, Python 3 compatible. And then he also did he tackled the crazy stuff with the WAF Samba stuff and got that going as well, which brought us basically to March this year, where we released 4.10. And that's the Python 3 release. So there are some challenges involved in sort of getting involved in this. So, okay, Samba's a pretty complex code base. I think everybody kind of knows that. And you just don't need to know just about Python, right? Because, okay, we got C Python modules, so you need to know some C. You need to know a bit about the AD as well, because, okay, most of the stuff is to do with AD. So you need to know about Python 2, Python 3, the difference between them. You need to know about the embedded C API. You need to know about some AD stuff because you're exposing API aid to the AD, and you're also using core Samba stuff in order to create the useful API for AD. And similarly, for the Python code, you need to know about the normal Python language, Python 2, Python 3, and again, Samba AD specific knowledge. And then you need to know about the crazy WAF stuff because you have to build this eventually in Python 3. So, okay, if you're, you know, a recruiter, I mean, and you put this down, are you going to find anybody? No, you're not. So what do you do in that situation? Because you have to do the job, but you're never going to get anybody who has the skills, so you have to kind of do things in a different way. So the nature of the code base had been so complicated, it's a mixture of Perl, Shell, Python, C, and a dose of craziness, as we know. Was there JavaScript? That was before my time, thankfully. Okay. So, yeah. Yeah, so you can't do something like this in one go, obviously. So you need to transition. So there's kind of two ways you can go to Python 2. You can kind of go the hard and fast way, which isn't really transition. It's kind of leap of faith, where you just say, no more Python 2. We're just going to go to Python 3. That's actually, in some ways, the easiest solution, because you just have one road to go. But it's too risky to try and do that, obviously. And you have a sort of critical mass that you have to get to before anything starts to work. And what if that fails in the middle? You just can't do it. Oh, or you could maybe say, okay, we'll fork things and we'll have a Python 2 branch and we'll have a Python 3 branch and we'll try and keep everything in sync. Yeah, that wasn't going to work either. So really, we were forced into Python 2, Python 3 compatibility mode. It's the only real goer or our strategy that would have any chance of working and with making such substantial code changes. So what kind of differences are we talking about? I did promise we weren't going to go through any code samples. I'm not lying. These are just really purely informational. So you kind of have different classes of kind of problems. So you have kind of syntactical changes like, so this thing here is how you specify an octal with the 0720. That'll work in Python 2, won't work in Python 3. The second variant will work in Python 2 and Python 3. Similarly, backticks are a way of doing repr. So backtick var will print out a textual representation of the object in Python 2, but if you use that same syntax in Python 3, won't work. We've got similar ones there for exceptions. You get the idea. Write it one way, it works in Python 2. Write it a different way, works in Python 2 and Python 3. And then you got things like print, which is a function, it's now a statement. So essentially that's just putting brackets around stuff mainly. There are other things that you might have to deal with, but normally you don't. But in a Python 2 kind of Python 3 kind of way, something like the next issue where in Python 2 you had a long type and an int type with different sizes, and in Python 3 you only have int, or is it long? I don't know. You only have one of them anyway. So yeah, you can get quite interesting problems with that if you're not careful. And then there are API changes. There's many, many, many. I'm not going to go through them, but you have something, again, in a Python 2, Python 3 kind of port compatibility mode where something like zip, map, and filter, they return iterators in Python 3 and lists in Python 2. And the good thing is that that actually looks like it works perfectly well in Python 2 and Python 3. So you get a result from something that gives you a map or a filter in Python 2 that gives you a list, and you iterate around that in a for loop. Do the same thing in Python 3, works perfectly fine. But if you run it a second time, if you use that same variable a second time, because it's an iterator and maybe you've jumped out of the first loop early or run to the end, the second loop, when it's using the same variable, is already not at the start of the list, it's either at the somewhere in the middle or it's maybe at the end. And that can cause some really cool problems. I had two pretty horrible issues when I was porting the tests that took days to find the one line where that was happening. Is that the end of that? Oh yeah, well, there's other things like the division. That's another one, I suppose, that is a Python 2, Python 3 kind of one, where in Python 2 it works one way, in Python 3 it works another way. So in Python 2, when you use the division operator, by default it will give you an int result. In Python 3, it will give you a float unless you use the floor operator. So they're the kind of classes of problems that you have. And then there's the big one that everybody knows about, the text model. So again, in a Python 2 only or a Python 3 only world, it's not such a bad thing. Well, actually it is bad, but it's far worse when you have to deal with Python 2 and Python 3 with the same code base. So essentially, in Python 2, you've got a string type and no byte type, and the same type is used basically to represent both. So you can have something that's containing something that are pure bytes or maybe a Unicode character, and you don't know what it really is. And the API is all designed around trying to do the right thing based on what it thinks is the right thing rather than actually knowing what it is. And similarly in Python, well, not similarly, but in Python 3, you don't have this ambiguity. You have a string type, you've got a byte type, you know exactly where you are. But as I said, the big problem comes with when you're running the same code in Python 2 or Python 3, because you might be tempted to say, okay, just use Unicode all the time. If you have real strings, and use string when you want to use bytes. But that really doesn't work either, because Unicode really isn't handled very well in Python 2 across even the standard API. A lot of it's to do with the standard encoding, because the standard encoding is ASCII in Python 2, and it doesn't matter what it is in Python 3, but you get implicit conversions going on when you use Unicode, when you start either printing it or sending it to various C API. If it's expecting, for example, in string type, it'll try and decode it to ASCII, and then you have problems if it doesn't contain ASCII code. So anyway, that's enough about that. It's a well-known problem. You can read up about what way people have approached it, but it's just wanted to point out the actual issue that was there. How are we doing for time? Ooh. Okay. So what way did we approach the port as such? Okay, so I think, yeah, I'll try and not really read that. It doesn't really make that much sense now that I'm thinking about it. Probably better to explain how we do testing. So we use GitLab, and we use GitLab CI. So we've got to thank, I guess, Andrew here and his band of merry men who evangelized us all into using GitLab. So we have, I suppose it was sometime before this time last year, we really started using it in anger, maybe in start of the year last year. So generally when code changes happen in Samba, before they get pushed into master or whatever, they go through what do they call it again? Auto build. So auto build is a script, and it runs a number of test jobs. So when the GitLab thing happened, we got all of these, I suppose you could call them test suite runs, converted into GitLab CI jobs. So you'd have, we'll call it with very informative names, we'd say we maybe started with 10 CI build jobs. We'll call them build underscore test one, build underscore test two, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when porting this, really what we wanted to do is do it iteratively. So the first kind of thing that you could do is run some sort of bulk changes, like, you know, fix all those print statements, fix all those exception statements, you know, things that you could find easily identify with either a tool, like I used 2 to 3 quite a bit initially. You could use grep, you could find various API, you could change them. So, okay, initially you can't test anything in Python 3, really, so you just, you make the changes and you try and ensure that they still work with Python 2. So that's the best you can kind of do. So what you need is you need a bit of flexibility, because sometimes changes are big, sometimes they're small, you can't really avoid it. Sometimes even if you were maybe trying to port a simple test, you suddenly end up like pulling the string and the string never ends and next minute you're not wearing any clothes. That kind of thing can happen. So you need a bit of understanding from the gatekeepers of the code that, okay, well, we have to make some larger than we want changes here and we can't really test it fully at the moment, but we will be able to test it later. So we can test it under our current circumstances where we're running Python 2, but can't really test the Python 3 part yet. So you need flexibility and you need the CI to be in there in order to ensure that you're not breaking what's there already. So one thing that I'm going to mention in this talk, probably more than once, is CI. CI, 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 CI. Without CI, you just cannot do this kind of job. So that's the kind of thing that we did. Started with those bulk changes, then we used that. The fact that you have that extra Python switch where you could specify Python 3 and start tackling test by test. As I said, that extra Python switch allowed you to configure some tests, not all tests, in those test suites to be able to run with the version of Python in extra Python. So in this case, it would be Python 3. So you end up doubling up the jobs that you had. So say we had 10 jobs. We create a build underscore test underscore Python 3, and that would have maybe only one test running in it first, running Python 3, then a second one, a third one, a fourth one, until all of the tests that could be converted will be converted, and then each job all the way through. So then you end up with 20 jobs that have one just running standard Python 2, the other one running Python 3. But what you got to realize then is that, one, you've got a whole lot of tests that you aren't running, and the other thing is that the build and the configure are still running on Python 2, and the test itself has only been run under Python 3, like sort of when it's been invoked. So it's like the client side is kind of run with Python 3, but it may be communicating with other parts of the code that are running Python 2 still. So you really need the build to be in Python 3 to kind of get the full coverage. And that kind of was the last big step. So then we started adding more jobs. So a job that would just initially just even build and configure with Python 3. And then just slowly adding in each of the new jobs. But unfortunately, you're talking about lumping them all in one go. So you had to do a lot more changes to get a single job to be ported to Python 3. But that's the way it worked. And a lot of the changes that were made just even to get the ones that worked with enable Python or enable extra or whatever it was called, did a huge amount of the groundwork. So once we did that, we actually got to the point where everything's running. We're ready to push the button nearly and porting kind of complete. Well, to the point where everything that we exercise has been tested anyway. So getting to the end, some statistics. I was tempted to put in a multi-year effort, 2010 to 2019, which would look really cool. It took us 10 years to do it. I did some quick trawling through the Git repository and some very, very finger-in-the-air kind of estimates. And at a minimum, anyway, I think we've changed that many files. 42,000 lines inserted and 11,500 approximately deleted. So that's quite a hunk of work. If I wanted to say what lessons that I learned anyway, been involved in this, is that moving to a compatibility code base is a really good first step. It's a good approach, I think. If you could get away with not doing it and going straight to Python 3, that would be better, maybe. But for us, that certainly wasn't an option. Be flexible and hope that the people that you're working with are flexible as well. CI is mandatory. I'll skip the third one there for the moment. And GitLab CI or something like that, it is your friend. And without it, really, you're just setting yourself up to fail. Another thing I learned is you can never have enough unit tests. That's a lesson that I've learned anyway throughout working on any sort of software. But this time around, it even was more important. And porting a complex project, wow. Yeah, to that. It was, as you said, it was people. They had a far worse time, I think, than I did. I stood on the shoulders. But of course, I didn't do all of this alone. So I have to say thank you to it. I know we've missed out people, but everybody here made it, as far as I could see in the Git log anyway, the most significant efforts. So with the slides, these are the kind of guides and documentation that I was looking at when I was doing this porting to Python 3 stuff, which was interesting, stressful, but ultimately very satisfying. That it's kind of, well, I'd hope we're done, but who knows. So that's it. I think we've gone over the time, so there's no time for questions. No, we haven't gone over the time. So if anybody has any questions, I will try and avoid answering them.
I'm also happy to answer questions from my end of the experience.
Well, so.
Well, thank you.
I got my wish.
thank you for what you did. It was an amazing year pulling through all that. And thank you for also mentioning Joe and Douglas, because they put in a massive effort. I was going to drag up and try and figure out how many weeks worth of time they put into it from the, but it was amazing to pull through, and it was amazing also seeing how it sort of really proved the GitLab infrastructure and things. Really made that a real use case for that was, I thought, very nice for it to have a real purpose. The interesting question is just how quickly to start ripping out the Py2 scaffolding.
As quickly as possible.
Okay.
Unless we need to backport it to 4.10, which is the trouble.
What's that?
Well, the thing that holds us back from ripping it all out right now is when someone on 4.10 finds a bug in the Python 3, and then so we fix it in master.
Oh, you want to backport to 4.10?
And then because they found it in 4.10, it's only polite to backport it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have to keep making Python 2. Compatible code until they stop finding bugs in 4.10, and then we can forget them.
Or you take the hit and decide to do two versions of the patch.
I
agree. it's not set in stone, and that's why I guess some discussion has to happen about it. But that's it. Okay, thank you very much.